Good morning to you, Natasha Mitchell, joining you now on ABC RN across the nation for Life Matters, coming out of the, well, some call it the heart of our nation, in our ABC Canberra studios this morning for a change. Nice to see the crew here, busy at work, as all of us are. As you head off to work, I hope you can stay with us for at least part of the show, if not all of the show, because we're heading a little later inside a virtual world. Walking up a virtual road, looking up at virtual skyscrapers around us, we're crossing virtual rivers, we're climbing virtual trees. Do the kids in your life, perhaps the 10-year-olds, play Minecraft? Are they obsessed with it? Is it creative? Is it educational? Or is it sucking the souls out of a generation of gamers? A great documentary on the world of Minecraft today, and I'll be very interested to hear from you if someone in your household is a fan. You can tweet us at RN Life Matters or get on our Facebook page. And I have to say thank you again for your continuing nominations for My Favourite Teacher. Stories coming in via the Life Matters homepage. Your response has been spectacular. So this is a chance to honour a terrific school teacher who made a difference in your life. And the plan is we're going to follow up with some of the teachers you nominate. We're going to ferret them out and find out about their passion, their love for teaching, for really cultivating the next generation of great minds. And I'm loving your stories. We've asked RN presenters to share their stories of a favourite teacher as well. And this morning I want to bring you Sarah Konoski. She is, of course, Books and Arts presenter on the weekends, and this is her story of a favourite teacher.
Hi, I'm Sarah Konoski from RN's Books and Arts. My favourite teacher was Mr. Sharry at St. Rita's High School in Brisbane. Mr. Sharry was a maths teacher, and I was terrible at maths. In fact, I remain pretty terrible at maths. But he was so excited by his subject, so in love with it, that my capacities didn't really matter. And at that crucial time in your life when an adult's interest can really make a difference, Mr. Sharry was genuinely interested in us. I remember him wanting to know all about a Nirvana cassette that a friend had copied for me. So thank you, Mr. Sharry. I'm still not great at maths, but you brought me a lot of joy in Year 11, and that is nothing to be sniffed at.
Good stuff. Sarah Konoski there from RN Books and Arts. And you, if you missed the fantastic conversation I had with Eddie Wu, maths teacher at Cherrybrook Technology High School on Monday, if you're feeling a little anxious about your maths, please, please tune into that interview on our website and check out Eddie's WooTube. This is his YouTube channel that has gone viral. It's a maths channel. He's a high school teacher and it's gone worldwide. It's wonderful. So to contribute your story of a favourite teacher, get on the Life Matters website today, abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters. Look on the right-hand side, look for My Favourite Teacher, click through, post your nomination and read some of the other great stories. We're celebrating terrific teachers in the coming weeks on Life Matters. Stay with us. You know, sometimes your life's work comes back to bite you in a way that you could never have imagined. Anne Dalton was blazing a trail, is blazing a trail in the pharmacy sector, driving engagement and advocacy for the Pharmacy Guild. So she was sitting in a meeting one day earlier this year talking about a partnership with a foundation called Cure Brain Cancer, and things didn't feel right, as you'll hear. It wasn't the work, it was her. It was a feeling inside her. And 2 weeks later, well, the roller coaster was to begin in what was to turn out to be a very bizarre twist. And if you've had cancer or a loved one with it, you know the anxiety well. Will they find a treatment that works in your lifetime, in the perhaps months or years that you might have? And one of the difficulties, and I've had this with many, many friends, in fact, who have had cancer, is that people with cancer who sign on to drug trials, and many do, don't know if the treatment is working, and nor do their doctors. It's a wait-and-see game, and now a new global collaboration wants to change that. We're going to hear about that in a moment with another guest. Joining me in the Life Matters studio here in Canberra is Anne Dalton this morning. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Natasha.
Tell us what happened at that meeting in January. It's 11 months ago now.
What an 11 months it's been. That's absolutely right. It was quite bizarre, I suppose, because I was sitting in the meeting and we were just talking about the role community pharmacy could play in raising awareness and potentially raising funds to help find a cure for brain cancer. And I was probably feeling a little bit off, not sort of usually my sort of sparky, talkative self. But we, you know, rolled along with the meeting and it was a great meeting. We sort of discussed a number of ways that community pharmacy could help the Cure Brain Cancer Foundation raise awareness and potentially funds to contribute to finding a cure for brain cancer. Normally, I'm probably usually on my game, but on this occasion, things just didn't feel right.
So, what was the feeling?
It's hard to explain. I think it's when you're really stressed. You're feeling really stressed and your mind's probably preoccupied with something else. And but because I had done these meetings, been in stakeholder meetings a number of times, I suppose I just knew what to do next. And I had my team with me, some key people from my team who were, you know, helping, obviously assisting in the meeting. And it was a very friendly meeting, so it was all fine. But, yeah, I left that meeting thinking, anyway, maybe I need a holiday, but that was no excuse. Don't we all? But I just come back from, 4 weeks holiday, so I really couldn't sort of, use that as an excuse.
2 weeks later, you're in a doctor's surgery.
2 weeks later.
Receiving a diagnosis you couldn't have fathomed.
Shocked. Absolutely. Absolutely shocked. Yeah, 2 weeks later, a diagnosis that really left my husband and I in absolute shock. It was something that you never want to hear. It's something that you never think you're going to hear. You often think you're immune from those kind of words being told to you. And of course, your life flashes before you, your children's beautiful faces flash before you. And it's really not a pleasant place to be. But
what did the doctor tell you?
The doctor told me that, so this was my GP that I went and saw. So just a few days before when I was in one of these meetings, I just thought, in fact, I said to my GP, I said, I just feel like I'm losing my mind. Mm. And I'd seen my GP for probably nearly 19 years. So she knew me and which I think certainly worked in my favour that my GP picked up that this isn't Anne the way I normally know Anne. She's seen me in very stressed situations before. She just said, right, we're off for a brain scan. And of course, I saw my doctor the next day. She was weeping as she escorted me to her, into her room. And I kind of felt the news wasn't good. But once again, it's just, this is all a little surreal. And she sat down and we sat down and my husband was there, thankfully. And she said, you have a very aggressive grade 4 GBM brain tumour.
Which is a glioblastoma multiforme, GBM.
Yes.
Very aggressive brain cancer.
Yes. Mm. And on her desk she had an envelope and in that envelope was a referral for me to go and see a neurosurgeon the very next day. So they weren't wasting any time.
And you were straight into surgery?
Straight into surgery about 5 days later. So we had to make arrangements. I was treated out of the Sydney Neurological Oncology Group team up there in Sydney. So, yeah, I was actually in the car. So I left the doctor's appointment and then we went home, told my children, which was the hardest thing I've ever had to do, my husband and I, looking at our children and telling them the news. And, so up to Sydney on the Friday for the appointment with the neurosurgeon, and then back up again on the Wednesday to have surgery.
In fact, this is not the first time brain cancer has landed in your life. Your sister, Jane, had a different form of brain cancer about 20 years ago, I think. So you've watched her go through this. Now yes. She's watching you.
Yes.
Is there a sort of simpatico there almost, an understanding about what changes when you receive a diagnosis like this.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jane's been a great and amazing support. Obviously, this news touched her probably more because she was more familiar than most with the journey. I was yet to travel, and I'm now travelling. Very upsetting knowing that I was potentially going to go through what she had been through, albeit 20 years ago. At one point, I took comfort in the fact that, well, you know, hers was 20 years ago. But you know what, Natasha? The research and the solutions and a cure
haven't progressed in the way that they ought.
No, 20 years ago. So, my sister's just, been an absolute great resource to me.
And this is part of why you want to speak out about this experience so clearly. So, while you're still so close to it, you've had surgery, you've just finished this last round of chemo this week, I think.
Just this week.
Which makes you feel pretty revolting.
Yeah. Plus, I'm still feeling the effects of the radiotherapy, which I had back in January and February and March, actually. So that, you know, I call radiation therapy the gift that keeps on giving. Because it doesn't actually, you know, the repercussions of that radiotherapy, is still with me and can potentially be up to, 18 months after treatment.
It's a very tough prognosis, this cancer. It's very aggressive. And yet there's something in you that has you powering on at this stage. There's a sort of deep optimism in you.
Yes, I suppose there is, and I suppose that I feel I've been, the serendipity of it all, really, in that, you know, I engage and advocate on behalf of other, other groups to bring people's, treatment and wellness and sort of, a focus to their particular conditions. But I suppose I've remained positive because I've always been a positive person. My feeling is that, you may as well put energy into a positive feeling as opposed to a negative feeling. Potentially the outcome's the same. I always feel that if you've got a positive thought, you're really, you're just that little bit ahead. And it's certainly easy to live with yourself when you've got a positive thought.
Yeah, well, it is. Not so easy to live with the cancer in the brain, though, is it? I mean, that's a tough existential experience. And what you're really focused on, as you are with in your role in engagement and advocacy at the Pharmacy Guild, is thinking about the power of good evidence to drive good health outcomes.
Yes.
And so this is the vital thing. This is why you're speaking out now about this experience. What can the research, what questions do researchers need to answer? What do trials need to answer from your mind?
Oh, lots. Look, I think it's been one area of cancer research. We know that it's been one area of cancer research that has been neglected. Every cancer is awful. Every cancer is awful. There is no doubt about that. But, the questions I would like to ask is there, with my sister having it, is it a familial, thing? I don't know the answers. I have a lot of people asking me the questions, and I'd like to know, is it a predisposition? Why, not the why me, but why my body? What went wrong and when, and what could I have done differently? The whys. I feel very upset when people, you hear about children with brain cancer. That's very sad. So if we could find out why for young children, so we can improve the treatment, so we can offer the treatments, we can get targeted therapies, we get a much, much better understanding of why, because it's a very cruel and insidious disease.
Let's talk about targeted treatments. This morning on Life Matters across the nation on ABC RN is Anne Dalton. She's head of engagement and advocacy at the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Back in January, she was at a meeting actually with the Cure Brain Cancer Foundation, looking at partnerships between the Pharmacy Guild and the Cure Brain Cancer Foundation. 2 weeks later, she received a diagnosis you could never imagine, a very aggressive form of brain cancer, glioblastoma multiforme, GBM, as you might know it. And we want to talk about a very exciting development in the brain cancer arena, because clinical trials, many people with cancer sign on to them. You might have had this experience, but do they meet your needs? Joining us now is Michelle Stewart, Head of Research Strategy at the Cure Brain Cancer Foundation. They have played a pivotal role in the development of a new system to test treatments, potential treatments for this form of cancer. Good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Natasha.
Yes, so now this is a whole new initiative, a global initiative that you're part of and that you've been involved in driving, called GBM Agile. Let's just start with what problem it's responding to. The problem of the current model of clinical trials for testing cancer treatments. What's not working for them in relation to brain cancer?
Yes, well, as Anne mentioned earlier, there hasn't been changes in 20 years in the treatment for brain cancer. And we just know that that is not good enough when we've seen so many other diseases improve with new types of research. So with brain cancer, basically there have been a number of trials that have been run, but they just have not actually met that endpoint of extending overall survival. And so we know that the way that we're doing things, it's going to take a significant number of years to actually find something that works, and we knew that that wasn't good enough.
So people sign on to a clinical trial hoping that it will make a difference to their prognosis. And sometimes the length of the trial that the protocol involves or requires is simply too long for someone with an aggressive brain cancer.
That's right. So I think before clinical trials are undertaken, everyone genuinely thinks that there's a good chance that that treatment might work. And, you know, if you're on a clinical trial, you often get allocated one drug and you stay on that drug for a number of years, and then at the end they work out whether the trial has been successful or not. And that's great if it's successful, but if not, that's a lot of time wasted, and that's somebody's, you know, very precious time when they've been on this clinical trial.
Mm. The thing is, surely the design of a clinical trial needs that length of time, though, to establish a good evidence base for a treatment.
It absolutely does need that length of time. But what we wanted to do with our global collaboration is look at ways of working out whether there is any early response. So obviously they'll still continue with that duration of time, but if we do get evidence that things are working or not working, we can change direction as required.
Okay, so tell us how it's going to work, this new collaboration that you'll be recruiting patients to.
Yes, so just firstly about the collaboration. So brain cancer is a problem not just in Australia but worldwide. So we thought the only way that we can do this is really putting our collective brain power to use. So this collaboration has designed this trial or trial platform called GBM Agile. And it's really like driving with your eyes open. So in old clinical trials, it was pretty much in the dark. But this new way of doing things is you have your eyes open and you can change direction as required. So if after a short period of time there is an interim endpoint, so we can work out whether treatment is the cancer is responding to the treatment and change direction as required. So this means that every patient that enters the trial will learn from the one before in real time, so basically while the trial is still going.
Does that, though, affect the ability of a trial to be double-blinded, for example?
No, it still is double-blinded because the statistics are set out in the beginning, so it's still very scientifically robust.
And by double-blinded, I mean that the researchers themselves, the clinicians, the patients, no one knows quite which patient has been assigned to what drug.
That's right. And so effectively the clinicians and patients will still not know, but the...
And it means then that those sort of subjective experiences don't inform your reading of the results.
That's right. So the statistics, it's actually really clever statistics that have been programmed in advance with the regulators. So the FDA have really been instrumental in developing this approach as well. So that it is still very scientifically robust, but potentially we can do things faster. And the FDA have said that they would like to see that this is the way that drug development happens, not just for brain cancer, but for other diseases worldwide in the future.
How revolutionary is this? I don't like to use that word much, but in relation to brain cancer, is this a game changer?
I do think so. And I've been involved in clinical trials for a number of years, and adaptive trial design, which is what this trial design has been, has actually been talked about as being kind of one of the holy grails of speeding up drug development and actually finding drugs that work for patients. And we are very excited about it. The reality is we don't know what treatments are going to work. But instead of taking a single shot on a disease, this is actually a platform. So we can get more treatments through faster and cheaper. So there's more incentive for people to put their drugs through there, and hopefully it's a numbers game and we'll find something that works faster.
One of the other aspects of this is much more targeted treatments, and this is the real possibility of cancer genomics, where you're actually looking at you're reading the genome of individual cancer tumours. So this is all part of this, isn't it? Much more targeted treatments. You get your cancer tumour genotyped and then you develop and trial medications that are much more specific to a given genotype of cancer.
Yeah, that's right. We don't want to give everybody the same drug, because we know not everybody's going to respond. We want to make sure that we can identify the right drug for the right patient. And as we understand more about the biology of brain cancer, and we understand more about the genomics and the genomics of the disease, we can make sure that we are working out which treatments work for the particular mutations, and so people are getting the right tailored treatment for their individual cancer.
So that will be happening as part of this approach?
That's right, and we have got scientists who are actually linked in with the clinicians, and the scientists are continuing to do their very clever work in the lab, and they will be informing the clinicians or the people running the trial of the latest developments, so that we are actually connecting both the science and the clinic.
So when are you seeking enrolment of patients, and where from?
So we'll be looking for patients to be enrolled into the trial from mid-2016. Currently, there'll be patients entering from the US, China, Europe and Australia. In Australia, we're looking to have sites all around the country. We'll definitely be starting with Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. And hoping to have more sites around the country as the trial continues.
Oh, I love the idea of a global collaboration. We can't be all repeating our efforts on such an aggressive cancer. And I imagine that gives you some optimism to hear these sorts of initiatives as you're living the experience.
Absolutely, Natasha. I mean, it was interesting, you know, in January when I was diagnosed, and I didn't rush to the internet to see what all the stats were. I think that doesn't really help. But, you know, it's been so encouraging. It's wonderful to know that there's this potential cure out there. It certainly enables me to sort of, take on each day with renewed enthusiasm.
I think you're incredible. I really do. All reports are from everyone we know who happens to know you, as it turns out. So all the best with your treatment ongoing.
Thank you.
And we wish you all the best. Thanks for joining us today on Life Matters.
Thank you, Natasha.
Anne Dalton, who is living with a diagnosis of a very aggressive form of brain cancer, and Michelle Stewart. And Anne is the Head of Engagement and Advocacy at the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Michelle Stewart, Head of Research Strategy at the Cure Brain Cancer Foundation. And the project that we've been talking about is called GBM Agile. We'll put details on the Life Matters website. Now, for the second half of Life Matters, live to air, we played a great BBC feature on the world of Minecraft, that computer game that so many kids are obsessed with, building virtual worlds inside a virtual world. Because of BBC copyright, we can't bring you the audio of that online or the podcast. But if you head over to the Life Matters website, we've popped a link there to where you can hear that great doco. It's well worth listening to. And while you're there at abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters, why not click on My Favourite Teacher on the right-hand side of our homepage and join the oodles of you who are nominating your favourite school teacher. This is a teacher who really left an impression on you. Tell us why they were influential in your lives. And we're going to follow up with some of those teachers, in fact, to hear their stories too. So spread the word. The hashtag is My Favourite Teacher, and head to the Life Matters website to nominate yours. So that's where I'll leave you for this online edition of Life Matters. Thank you so much for your company today. Next on the program, it's a conversation with curious minds, and they are, well, curious, passionate minds that I know you love. It's a conversation with Philip Adams, Robin Williams, Fran Kelly, hosted by Richard Feidler, he of Conversations, no less. Together, those three broadcasters, Fran, Philip and Robin, amongst your favourites here on RN, are marking 75 years in broadcasting, and we're celebrating them. So join us as we do that. Bye from me, Natasha Mitchell.